This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Good evening and welcome to Africa News Tonight from the English to Africa service of the Voice of America, your source for Pan-African news and world developments. I'm Kim Lewis in Washington, and coming up on Africa News Tonight:
the significant progress made in recent decades against malaria is at risk, according to the World Health Organization. In its annual report looking at the global fight against the disease, the WHO says malaria cases are on the rise in several countries.
That's Henry Ridgewell reporting. We'll have full details on this story coming up. Also, Zimbabwe's High Court acquits a prominent pastor who was arrested for criticizing former President Robert Mugabe. EU and African leaders are gathering today in Ivory Coast for a summit focused on issues that affect both continents, while the plight of migrants in Libya was the focal point of a UN Security Council meeting yesterday. We'll have these stories and more all ahead on Africa News Tonight. Our top story: the significant progress made in recent decades against malaria is at risk, according to the World Health Organization. Henry Ridgewell reports that in its annual report looking at the global fight against the disease, the WHO says malaria cases are on the rise in several countries.
Many countries are moving toward eliminating malaria, among them Madagascar, Senegal, and Zimbabwe. But a WHO report warns that in others, progress has stalled. Malaria cases increased by more than 20% from 2015 to 2016 in 8 African countries, including Rwanda, Nigeria, and the Democratic Republic of Congo. At the same time, funding for malaria prevention and treatment has leveled off, reaching $2.7 billion in 2016, less than half of the 2020 target. Professor David Conway is from the London School of Hygiene and Tropical Medicine.
That amount of funding internationally has plateaued. Possibly it's reached the realistic maximum. And it's always been assumed, indeed it's been important, that countries themselves should commit to funding malaria control. And I think the big opportunity now is for those countries to step up and realise that this is good value.
Overall, Africa continues to bear the highest burden of the disease, with approximately 401,000 deaths in 2016, a slight decrease from the previous year. In addition to improving the coverage of existing methods of malaria prevention, the WHO calls for urgent investment in new tools. Again, Professor Conway.
It's been recognised for a long time that a malaria vaccine would transform the situation potentially. And so more research is needed to develop an effective malaria vaccine that could cover the populations that at the moment have high malaria rates and that perhaps don't use the available interventions, even when they are being funded.
Several malaria vaccines are under development. The WHO is planning a major trial of the so-called RTSS vaccine starting next year in Kenya, Ghana, and Malawi. But its latest report warns the world is at a crossroads. Without better funding and more effective rollout of tools to tackle malaria, the progress made in recent decades could be undone. Henry Ridgewell for VOA News, London.
Zimbabwe's High Court has acquitted a prominent pastor who was arrested for criticizing former President Robert Mugabe. Human rights groups say today's ruling is a clear message for the new government of President Emmerson Mnangagwa. Sebastian Mofu reports for VOA from Harare.
Announcing the not guilty verdict Wednesday, Justice Priscilla Chigumba said state lawyers had failed to prove that in July of last year, Pastor Ivan Mawarire had called for violent protests and attempted to unseat then-President Robert Mugabe. Instead, the High Court judge said the clergyman acted within his rights when he called for Zimbabweans to stay at home to push the government to address the moribund economy. Mawarire is the activist behind the hashtag This Flag movement, launched in 2016 to protest the government's handling of the economy and human rights abuses. When Wednesday's verdict was announced, Mawarire punched the air before smiling. Afterward, he spoke to reporters.
To the citizens of Zimbabwe, none of us should ever be afraid to animate our own constitution. Whilst I'm elated and excited at the result, I am saddened that this is what we have to go through for freedoms and rights in our own nation. One does hope that as our country changes and begins to move forward, that things like this should never, ever be allowed to happen to the citizens of this nation.
The change he's referring to, of course, is the dramatic turn of events that resulted in President Mugabe resigning last week after 37 years in office. Mugabe's former deputy, Emmerson Mnangagwa, was sworn in as president Friday and will serve as head of state until elections are held next year. Zimbabwe Lawyers for Human Rights says Wednesday's ruling puts the new government on notice. The organization is representing both Mawarire and an American woman charged this month with subversion over a tweet she allegedly posted criticizing Mugabe. Harrison Nkomo of the Zimbabwe Lawyers for Human Rights was at the courthouse Wednesday.
Naturally, this should work as a guideline. In law, we call it a precedent. It should work as a guideline to police officers, to politicians, especially in this new era, on the principles of human rights and the constitution.
Christopher Mutangadura, who represented the state in Mawarire's case, told VOA the government will not challenge the High Court's ruling. However, Mawarire's legal troubles are not over yet. He faces another charge of subversion following his arrest in September of this year after he called for more anti-government protests. The date has not been set for that trial. Sebastian Mofu for VOA News, Harare.
Thank you, Sebastian. Well, Father Fidelis Mukonori is the Catholic priest who mediated talks between Zimbabwe's former president, Robert Mugabe, and the military generals who toppled him. In an interview with VOA's Zimbabwe service, he says Army General Constantino Chiwenga confronted former First Lady Grace Mugabe over allegations she wanted him eliminated. Father Mukonori also reveals that Mrs. Mugabe attended some of the meetings between the president and the generals, even though the generals were unhappy that she had attacked them, war veterans, and then Vice President Emmerson Mnangagwa at ruling ZANU-PF party rallies. VOA Zimbabwe Services Blessing Zulu speaks with Father Mukonori about the last hours before Mugabe's resignation and the role the First Lady played in the negotiations.
He came to this decision because he thinks, he was thinking, we were discussing. It was not like as if he just woke up suddenly and just said, this is what I'm going to do. The last couple of days, I could read that the man was thinking various options. I mean, he's an intelligent man. At 93, I mean, he would see that 60,000 people had marched. There is a demonstration to say they're not happy. That he could see, and that it had never happened for our armed forces to leave the barracks with their trucks going into the street. That's not a simple issue to take place. So he read all that. He could see that. And we were talking and discussing it seriously. We were not playing games. We were talking as men. We were discussing as mature people. It was not a game.
And there are these reports that when he eventually agreed to step down, he did shed some tears. Is that true?
Yes, there are people who think they can talk as if they were present. I was the mediator. In fact, when he read the last letter and he took his pen and signed, his face just glowed as a sign of relief and of saying, you know, finito, it's done.
Did the former First Lady feature in any of these discussions?
She came in when she had to, but she was not the major focus. We were zeroing in on the commander-in-chief of the defense forces, and the head of state and the government, and the first secretary of ZANU-PF, which was President Robert Mugabe. For us, that was the first center focus. We didn't want to lose focus. First lady is the wife of the president. The first lady was secretary for women affairs, and therefore that in my view was part and parcel of the responsibility of the president. So we didn't have to take that as a major issue. She was part of the issue, yes, within the confines of the cases as they were coming all over the place. But that was not the center focus as far as I was concerned.
But then there were also reports that there were allegations that people wanted to arrest or eliminate General Chiwenga. Did that come up for discussion?
It did, but it was denied. I brought up the issue personally during the discussion period with the commanders.
But were they speaking with one voice? We saw a lot of senior officials in the security sector. Were they all agreed? Is that the sense that you're getting?
My brother, these are highly intelligent people and well-educated people. They had had a long haul of reflection. Their discussions were just second to none. The singleness of purpose was clear.
That was Father Fidelis Mukonori speaking with VOA Zimbabwe service reporter Blessing Zulu from Harare. While some Zimbabwean immigrants who live in neighboring Botswana say they are willing to return home following the swearing of a new president in their homeland, following the inauguration of Emmerson Mnangagwa on Friday, the estimated 50,000 Zimbabwean immigrants' hopes have been raised that they might go back, but they say only if they see real change. Reporter Martin Ngwenya has more from Habarone.
In his address, when he took oath of office in Harare on Friday, Mr. Mnangagwa promised to prioritize the economy and create jobs. This was sweet music to the ears of many Zimbabweans who have endured nearly two decades of economic hardships. The new president urged Zimbabweans in the diaspora to return home to rebuild their country. While the change in leadership after 37 years of authoritarian President Robert Mugabe's rule has been hailed across Zimbabwe and beyond, some are still skeptical. Mr. Aaron Moyo, a university graduate who finds himself surviving on odd jobs in Botswana, says in his words, Mr. Mnangagwa is cut from the same cloth as his predecessor and therefore doubts if there will be real reform.
I'm still a bit skeptical about the appointment of Emmerson Mnangagwa to the presidency of Zimbabwe because he's cut from the same cloth as Robert Mugabe. And there are still issues which we need him to address, like the issue of corruption within ZANU-PF. If he's willing to address that, maybe we can go back home. But at the moment, we have to sit back and see what happens.
The 30-year-old Moyo's views have been echoed by other Zimbabweans who feel Mnangagwa's previous involvement with the ruling ZANU-PF party, and particularly as a close ally of Mr. Mugabe, cast doubts on his capability to turn around the fortunes of a resource-rich country. But some are more than willing to give Mr. Mnangagwa the benefit of the doubt to lead the Southern African country out of its political and economic woes. Miss Irene Dube, a Zimbabwean teacher in Harare, was particularly impressed by Mr. Mnangagwa's maiden address as Zimbabwe's president in Harare on Friday. But Dube wants to see more developments in her home province of Matabeleland, which has largely been marginalized since independence in 1980.
As people of Matabeleland, we welcome the newly elected president. Although we feel we've been marginalized for a very long time, and we are hoping this time around Matabeleland will be prioritized in the development programs, so that even us who are in the diaspora, we will consider going back home to work towards the development of our region.
Matabeleland saw the massacre of nearly 20,000 of its own people, predominantly Ndebele, under Mugabe's early rule between 1980 and 1987. The region has largely remained marginalized, with its residents opting to vote for the opposition in recent years. Mrs. Sipho Mhlanga arrived in Botswana 6 years back, forced by the deteriorating economic situation back home. But with a new president at the helm, Mhlanga sees this as a perfect opportunity to retrace her steps back home and cast her vote in next year's election, provided there's no repeat of the violence which has been associated with past polls.
As someone who's in the diaspora, we are so hopeful that next year's elections will be free and fair. They will uphold the rule of law. There won't be beating of people or being coerced to vote for people that they don't want. Maybe that way, if the president actually insists on that, then we may put our trust on him.
While there is hope of a turnaround after the departure of long-term ruler Mugabe, who is blamed for the collapse of the country's economy, analysts warn Zimbabwe's economic recovery will not be overnight. The country has no currency of its own, employment is estimated at 90%, and corruption is rampant, forcing millions to leave the country for greener pastures abroad. Reporting for VOA's English to Africa service, this is Martin Ngwenya in Harare, Botswana.
You're listening to Africa News Tonight live on the following frequencies, 15, 580 and 6080 kilohertz on the Voice of America. I'm Kim Lewis in Washington. At 21 minutes past the hour, here's a recap of our top stories. The WHO warns that malaria cases increased by more than 20% from 2015 to 2016 in 8 African countries, including Rwanda, Nigeria, and the DRC. And Zimbabwe's High Court acquits a prominent pastor who was arrested for criticizing former President Robert Mugabe. For more news and information, visit our website at voaafrica.com. European and African leaders are gathering today in Ivory Coast for a summit focused on issues that affect both continents, including economic cooperation, job creation, migration, and peace and security. The two-day European Union-African Union summit in Abidjan is bringing together heads of state from 55 AU member states and 28 in Europe. Governments on both continents have in the past few years faced the challenge of migrant flows through North Africa and across the Mediterranean Sea to Europe, with debates over resettlement and how to improve safety along the route that leaves thousands of people dead each year. While the plight of migrants in Libya was the focal point of a UN Security Council meeting yesterday, after the U.S. television network CNN aired shocking footage of African migrants apparently being sold as slaves in that country, VOA's Margaret Bashir reports from the United Nations. Envoys called for the prosecution and the possible imposition of sanctions on human traffickers and their networks.
The footage that aired last week sparked international outrage, including protests in Europe and Africa. Young men from Niger and other sub-Saharan countries were shown being auctioned off as farm workers for about $400. Libya's UN envoy El Mahdi El Majerbi said the government is investigating the CNN video, but he questioned its authenticity and said his country is the victim of a large-scale false media campaign of defamation trying to portray Libya as a racist country. French ambassador to the United Nations François Delatte, whose government called for the council meeting, said victims are subjected to horrific human rights violations, including rape, torture, and arbitrary detention. He's heard here through an interpreter.
These abject practices are not merely intolerable from the moral standpoint, they also constitute crimes against humanity, and they cannot be left unpunished.
The UN envoy recommended the Council impose targeted sanctions against individuals implicated in human trafficking and suggested that perpetrators could be referred to the International Criminal Court for prosecution. Several Council members also urged measures to address the root causes of forced migration, especially poverty, and they called for opening new legal pathways for migrants. UN High Commissioner for Refugees Filippo Grandi said some 17,000 migrants are in detention in Libya, and many more are being held by smugglers and traffickers who are protected by militia groups. He said the United Nations has secured the release of about 1,000 asylum seekers and refugees this year. Margaret Bashir, VOA News, the United Nations.
An inquiry in Australia is recommending the closure of a youth detention center involved in an abuse scandal that shocked the nation. Images of inmates being mistreated, including one teenage boy who was restrained and placed in a split hood, were shown last year. Phil Mercer reports from Sydney.
Last year, a TV documentary showed images of young detainees being tear-gassed and strip-searched in youth detention facilities in Australia's Northern Territory. The scandal prompted the authorities to set up a Royal Commission, the highest form of inquiry in Australia. Its final report contains more than 2,500 pages and demands sweeping changes to address the shocking and systemic failures in the Territory's youth justice system. A teenage detainee told the investigating team that he'd been deprived of food, repeatedly strip-searched, and stopped from using a toilet during his detention. He said he was forced to defecate into a pillowcase. The report said that the system's failures had happened over many years and were known and ignored at the highest levels. Northern Territory Chief Minister Michael Gunner is promising to act on the proposals.
I am sorry of the stories that will live on in those children who are in our care, children that we have failed, because our youth justice and child protection systems are supposed to make our kids better, not break them.
The report calls for an end to detention for children aged under 14 in the Northern Territory, prohibiting the use of tear gas and force on child inmates, and a move away from punishment to therapy and rehabilitation. The Northern Territory's notorious Don Dale Youth Detention Centre, where much of the mistreatment of child inmates took place, should also be closed, the report says. Margaret White, one of the commissioners, says more humane alternative accommodation should take its place.
The point must be met that there will be some young people who must be kept in secure detention, either because of the extreme seriousness of the crimes that they commit or because of their own complex needs. And we've recommended a small, secure facility. We don't want any more than 12 beds in any one facility.
Most of the teenage inmates in the Northern Territory are Aboriginal Australians, who are significantly overrepresented in the justice system. The children who are tear-gassed have said they feared for their lives and still suffer disturbing flashbacks and nightmares. Lawyers said detaining children in isolation was also a clear violation of the United Nations Convention Against Torture. Phil Mercer for VOA News, Sydney.
And that wraps up this edition of Africa News Tonight. I'm Kim Lewis in Washington. For all the latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at voaafrica.com. Please stay tuned to the Sunny Side of Sports coming up at 18:30 UTC. On behalf of our producer, Bill Workinger, and our engineer, Patrick Dea, thanks for choosing the Voice of America.
Hello, I am Shaka Sali. Join me on Straight Talk Africa every Wednesday as we discuss topics of special interest to Africans, including politics, economic development, press freedom, health, social issues, and conflict resolution. Take your pick. Watch on television, log on to the internet, or listen right here on the radio.
Are you suffering from heartache? No problem. We've got the cure for you. The African beat can soothe your heartache with its awesome tunes from the African continent. So join me, David Vandy, Mondays through Fridays at 0900 and 2000 Universal Time for a healing journey. I guarantee it.